You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. And you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Don't miss the Stiffs NBA show. We just put up episode 3, our season preview one. You can go and check that out. Even do an X's and O's breakdown. I know a lot of you guys like the X's and O's stuff. I did a brief X's and O's thing in there, so be sure to check that one out on YouTube, and you can subscribe while you're there so you never miss anything. Also, real quickly, I always forget to say this. If you want to advertise with the show, hit me up, denverstiffs@gmail.com. I could be reading your ad right now. This could be your company or your product, whatever it is you're trying to sell. This could be that part. This episode of the show is obviously going to be on that first win over the Clippers. The Nuggets, undefeated, 1-0, off to a hot start. Really, what a fantastic night, man. I got to say, so I have to start things off here. I'm going to talk about the Michael Malone extension. I'm going to talk about the game and what happened. But I have to start with Stiff's Night Out / the Denver Nuggets Watch Party. That we co-hosted along with the Nuggets tonight. Just a fantastic turnout. This might have been our best one yet. Every year these seem to get bigger and bigger and better and better. And I just love our partnership we have with the Nuggets. I'm so glad that they see the value in partnering with us and bringing us into the fold of what they're doing. I just think it's great. And a big thank you to everybody that came out. The place was packed. I mean, it was absolutely packed. Top floor. There's two floors to this bar. It's a huge bar, giant screen TV, and it was packed. There was a couple hundred people there. I'd guess 300 people came through. Maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe a little bit more even. It was just great. And I always say this. I so enjoy meeting everybody. You know, that listens to the show and reads DenverStiffs.com. It's one of the things I really enjoy is we all share in this somewhat unique experience of following this team, the Denver Nuggets, and talking about them and keeping the conversation going and really just keeping the conversation about life going. And basketball is that sort of that centerpiece of it all that holds it all together. And it's just a lot of fun. So tonight, had a great time. Got to meet a lot of you. Some of you guys becoming familiar faces, becoming friends, because I see it all of them. So it was great. If you've never been out, we'll have another one here in a couple months. And I just encourage you to go because it's such a fun event. A lot of people rolled solo to this one. And, you know, you roll solo, but you end up hanging out with a bunch of people and talking hoops and cheering on the game. And it was just a lot of fun. So I'm recording this one. It's 3:00 in the morning. Stayed up to watch the game again because, you know, I was obviously mingling and stuff at the event. So wanted to get it a second time. And you know what? It was even better the second time. I got to say that the nervous energy was gone. The Clippers were such a great first game for the Nuggets to play because I talked about this on the show. I've been kind of making this a talking point. They're a good team. They're not bad. They're a good team. They're just like they were last year. I don't think they're a playoff team. I know Bill Hanslick said he thought they were on the broadcast. I heard that one, but I disagree. I don't think they're a playoff team, but they're not far. They're just like a step below a playoff team. And, you know, on opening night, as emotional game for them, they brought it. Gallo played as hard as I've ever seen him. And he clearly wanted this one, but Denver battled. I didn't think they played great, but they battled and they ended up getting it done. So if you're new to this show, the way I like to do game recaps, I don't just talk about what happened in the game. I think that's boring. I just provide my notebook. I take notes when I do the rewatch and try to get detailed notes. So I'm just going to start going through here and then at the end we'll talk about Michael Malone. One of the things that stood out very early in the game, Will Barton picked up a foul because Tobias Harris pinned him very deep into the restricted area. And the reason this is noteworthy, you know, they ran an action in which Barton had to be in help side, and then Tobias Harris was able to seal him in that help side. And why this is important is because Tobias Harris is a big dude, and Will Barton is obviously not. He's a small dude. So when this is one of the things that I think Barton's going to have to really fight hard, against is he just can never get beat because never get pinned there because that's such an easy dunk or it's a foul there. So the fact that it happened so quick, I think smart coaches around the league, not all, but smart coaches and smart scouts around the league are going to look at Will Barton and say, okay, how can we pin him in positions where he has to decide between helping or not getting pinned down by his man? And for teams that have bigs like that, it could be a problem. But it only happened, the one time was really the only time it really stood out where it was like, man, yep, that's one of the things you fear. But it did happen early in the game. How good was LaFonso Ellis on the call? Man, I talked about this the other day on Twitter. LaFonso Ellis, I got to meet him. He's one of my childhood idols, one of the first Denver Nuggets I really, knew. And it was so cool to see. First of all, I got to meet him at practice the other day, talked to him for a good 10 minutes. Just one of the most likable guys. And just, it was so cool for it just to sit and get to talk hoops with one of your childhood idols. But how great was he on the call? I thought he had some great insights. I thought everything he had to say was interesting. He's very positive, which, it was interesting. I thought Jokic's game was very mixed. Some really great stuff, some really not so great stuff. But he was just so positive the whole game and everybody was talking about it. And I just loved having him on the call. I also love this idea of the Nuggets bringing in guys from previous generations, because one of the things I've criticized the organization for is not really embracing their history. LaFonso Ellis is their history. Guys listening to the show who are under the age of probably 35 probably don't have any connection to LaFonso Ellis. But I want you to have a connection. You have a connection to Scott Hastings and LaFonso Ellis. I love Hastings. I think he's great. This is, by no means a criticism of Marlon Hastings. I think they're awesome. But Fonz, it's like one of those things where you get a new era. He was a big time player for the Denver Nuggets. He was a big time prospect. Injuries kind of wrecked his career. He had an unfortunate, some knee issues that were very unfortunate, but he was a heck of a player, fan favorite. And I just think it's cool that now a whole new generation is getting to be introduced to him and gets to know him. Even though you don't get to know him necessarily as a player, you get to know him as a person, and that just opens up. It just ties the past to the present, and I think that's really, really cool. One of the storylines of this game was just how well the Nuggets drew fouls, and Nikola Jokic in particular. Maybe it's the max contract. Maybe Jokic finally is getting superstar calls. He had a lot of them in this game that I thought were 50-50 calls. Sure, they're fouls. On replay, you watch in slow motion, oh yeah, he got him on the arm or whatever. But live, they don't always call those. And I thought Jokic, he drew a bunch of them on Gortat. Gortat was furious. He was pissed at the refs tonight. And it was noteworthy how much, not just Gallo, but the whole team did such a great job of drawing fouls. How good is Gary Harris, man? This dude, man, he's just such a consistently great player, and he just gets better every single year. His handle's good. He's funny. He doesn't dance with the ball, and I think that's a good thing. That's a praise, not a criticism. He doesn't, you think about guys like Bradley Beal who are considered better one-on-one players, and they'll get the ball and they'll dribble at the top of the key. Maybe they'll go back and forth, left hand, right hand, trying to figure out how to attack. Gary Harris is very deliberate in his decision making, and he had that through the legs crossover where he finished it, like just kind of threw the ball up on the rim and it went in. But the move through the legs for a crossover was just such a great move to beat his man and to get to the cup. And it's just one of those things where, sure, he did that a few times last year, but the fact that he's doing this in game one with such confidence, it was just, to me, is incredibly encouraging. Gary Harris just gets better every year, and I have a very strong feeling that was the case this year as well. The first really surprising thing to happen in the game was that Juancho Hernangómez and Malik Beasley both got into the rotation very quickly. Torrey Craig, not in the rotation, did not play today. Malone had mentioned the other day at practice, I wasn't there, but I saw some of the reports. I think Harrison Wynn, BS in Denver, reported this. Malone has said that Juancho, Malik, and Torrey will sort of all be rotating pieces. One, you know, some guys will play one night, but not the other. Kind of depend on matchup and feel. Now, first of all, I don't love that because I do think you need to develop some continuity. But what I do, when I heard that, I thought, okay, Torrey Craig's playing and those other two, maybe that's just like a way of keeping them engaged. So to see Wancho and to see Malik tonight was just so encouraging. I like Torrey Craig. This is nothing against him, but I think, you know, I was worried, and I still am. It's not like my worries are completely squashed, but I was worried Wancho was getting left behind. So the fact that he not only got to play tonight, but what did he play? 15 minutes. He played more minutes than Mason Plumlee. He went 2 for 3 from the field and was 5 points, 6 rebounds. He was, I think, he was a -8, so almost a team low -8. Only Trey Lyles worse. But nonetheless, he did a lot of good things out there. He kept some possessions alive, grabbed offensive rebounds as he's known to do. He just made some plays. Defensively, he made some plays. He made some bad ones as well. But just the hustle, like to see him go out there for 15 minutes, and I thought all 15 minutes were high intensity, high effort from him, and that's encouraging. Maybe that means he will continue to get minutes in the rotation. I think there's a good chance of that. And Malik Beasley, same thing. There were a couple times where I thought Malik Beasley was trying to do a little bit too much, and it's funny, he was so good about not doing that in the preseason. You get into the regular season and then you get sped up a little bit. For him, I think just, and you could tell the wheels are turning for him, just the reduce your load, reduce your workload, keep things simple. You're going to be all right. The Nuggets second unit had a really strong start to the second. I thought they were good. So you look at the plus minus, the entire bench is a negative. Only Mason Plumlee was a zero. He only played 13 minutes. I'm going to talk about him a little bit later. But Trey Lyles minus 10, Monte Morris minus 9, Wancho minus 8, and then Malik, a positive one actually. So Malik was the one positive. But you look at that negative and you think, okay, maybe they didn't play so well. First of all, they played as a five-man unit for a stretch in that end of first, start of second, and I think that's really cool that you could play an entire unit like that. But then, I just think it's a strength. The Clippers have a good bench. I mean, Lou Williams is a very, very good bench. I put on the report I did the preview on DenverStiffs.com, and I think I put that as a wash or Clippers favored because they have a strong bench. Boban's a unique case. Lou Williams, sixth man of the year candidate. So they have some guys off the bench, even Montrezl Harrell, who I really, really like. They've got some guys. So the fact that Denver's bench really didn't look terrible against them, I thought, that's a big positive. I thought for large stretches they were good. The Jokic plus the bench lineup was weird. They went to that in the second quarter, and you know, here's what's weird about it. I don't mind that lineup. I don't love it, but Jokic elevates, sort of what we believe. Jokic makes every player better. The thing I don't like is they've never played that. In the preseason, they never went to that rotation, so it was kind of weird to throw him out there with Trey Lyles and Malik Beasley, Wancho Hernangómez, and then Monte Morris. It was weird. It did not work, and I'm really curious to see if that's something they're going to continue to go to. I'm guessing. I don't think Malone's going to make snap judgments on one game. I think he'll probably make judgments every 2 weeks or so. He'll kind of look at what's working because then you get a little bit more of a sample size. So expect to see more of that lineup, but it felt to me like one of the very few lineups in the game today from the Nuggets that did not have an identity. And, of course, they give up the lead. That lineup gave up the lead. Denver had two big leads in this game and two opportunities to sort of put the game away, and they did not. And look, basketball's a game of runs, but it was certainly there for the taking two times, once in the first quarter, I think the start of the third quarter was like, okay, they can put this thing away, put it out of reach, get up to 15-point lead, and then you're sitting pretty, but they were unable to do that, unfortunately. Nuggets offense continues to look a little bit clunky. Offensive rating actually not that bad tonight. I think it was somewhere around 103. But you know, there's just stretches one of the things I think they're trying to do. I feel like the Nuggets are trying to attack mismatches a little bit too much. And when the Nuggets are at their best, they're running one action into the next, just one after the other after the other. And they're not. It's not one of those things where, you know, the Nuggets offense is designed to create mismatches. It's designed to get the defense chasing the ball. And there was a lot of times tonight where the defense would fall a step behind, and then Denver would think, okay, sweet, now we can go to the weak, to the mismatch or whatever. I think Denver just needs to be, okay, they're a step behind, keep running. Now they're two steps behind. Now they're three steps behind, and then you get a bucket. And I just didn't feel like there was a ton of possessions tonight like that where they run an action, they get the defense scrambled, but you don't quit. You just keep going, keep things popping. And unfortunately, they didn't get there. I think it's going to take some time. I was one of the people, part of my preview has been, I think Jokic and Millsap are going to work out eventually, but I do think there's going to be another adjustment period. And hopefully they're good enough anyway. I actually believe that. I think they're good enough to win games anyway, but I just don't think we're going to see that like peak ball movement for at least a couple of weeks, because I think it's going to take a little bit of time for them to get there. But I do think they're going to get there. Murray, another thing that I think is concerning, Jamal Murray really struggles against pressure. And I talked about this in the preseason because it happened with Chris Dunn ripping him in the backcourt, which you almost never see. Well, it happened today with a handful of times when, Avery Bradley or Patrick Beverley were just really getting into his grill, and he made some bad decisions and or he struggled to get the ball where it was supposed to go. There was, I know one time they were trying to get Jokic in the post for just to get him going, and he gets great post position, and then Murray just can't get the ball there because whoever's on him is hounding him so much that he picked up the ball too far and then he couldn't make the pass. So I think this is going to be a big deal for Jamal Murray, and I don't know that his game can go to the next level until he learns how to handle that pressure. And in order to handle that pressure, he's going to have to improve as a ball handler. I think it's the number one thing. His handle is good in open court moves. It's good in one-on-one moves. But if you apply pressure and want him to make smart decisions as a point guard, he struggles. Chris Paul is the ultimate example of a guy that's great at this. He can run the show if he's in a double team. Like if you trap Chris Paul, he still can read the floor. He's just got such good control of the basketball and of his body. Well, Jamal Murray needs to get to a point similar to that where he just handles the ball so well that pressure he's not even bothered by. Right now he seems very, very bothered by it. Paul Millsap had one of the best defensive plays I think we're going to see it for a while. 3-on-1 fast break, he sprints back, and he's able to contest the play. And what he did, I love it. I'm telling you guys, Paul Millsap is an incredible defensive player, an incredible one. I wish his goal was to win Defensive Player of the Year, because I think it's actually somewhat attainable for him. He's that good. Well, he gets back on defense, and, it's a 3-on-1, ball's on the left side. He stunts at the guy with the ball who's on the left, basically on the left wing attacking. He fakes at him, stunts at him, and makes him pick up the dribble and pass to the middle. Then he shuffles his feet over to the middle and knows that he can't steal the ball, he can't contest the ball, he can't take a charge. All he can do is plant his feet so he doesn't get the block call and just make him jump into him and over him, and he did it. It's so perfect. He got the guy with the ball to bite on the fake, and then he gets over. If there's any high school basketball players or college basketball players listening to this, it's one of the best skills there is – when you're in that position, you kind of have to shoot for the moon anyway. So to fake one action and then just position yourself for another one, that's how you do it. And he did it so perfectly. It was a thing of beauty to watch. Nuggets starters played a lot of minutes tonight together, which I think is encouraging. I think it's their best unit, so I'm excited that they're going to get chemistry. Again, I think it'll take a couple weeks to get that chemistry, but if they're playing 20 minutes a night together, I don't know how many minutes it was, but it looked like it was a lot, that chemistry is going to develop quick. Of course, they got Boban, and it's funny with this game. I don't know how much to – in some ways it was good. There's some good takeaways from this game, but in some of them it's I just don't know what to make of it. Boban was a +7 in 18 minutes. He was 6-for-8 from the field, 8 rebounds. I mean, he's just 18 points, 8 rebounds in 18 minutes. He's so hard to figure out. So I don't know. I think Denver did a very good job, but – Boban, when he was in, dominated the game. I thought Gallo really wanted this one. He's frustrating to watch, man, the way he draws fouls, but he played hard. You could tell he tried to go at some guys in this game, and it meant something to him, which I think is cool. Makes the game more fun. Now let's get to the end of the game, because this is the story of the game. With 5 minutes to go, boy, did things look bleak. I thought Denver let this one slip through their fingers. I won't lie. I thought it was done. They were down 8 points with 5 minutes to go. And this is where I think the story of the game is that you know, it's only one game. We don't know if this is true, but boy, did it look like this was a mature basketball team. Did it look like it was a team that had grown up quite a bit. And so with 5 minutes to go, I thought down eight, oh man, the offense didn't look good. Boban was Bobaning. It was just like, man, they got him. The Clippers got him. And, you know, Jokic hits a huge three. I thought that there was a couple plays. They buckled down on defense, and which is a crazy thing to say. I think Denver's defense in this game was actually pretty good, especially when it needed to be. But they got a couple stops, and then offensively, they just couldn't get anything going. They needed guys just to make shots. It was like, you're not going to get anything easy. You need to make shots. Well, Jokic hits a big three. He was 0 for 3 from behind the arc before that. Takes a fourth one, knocks it down, nothing but net. That was huge. Very next play, Paul Millsap hits an even bigger shot, a one-handed floater, when Jokic went to post up, didn't get anything to work, and he kicks out to Millsap, is sort of handed him a great grenade. Millsap takes one dribble and makes his only shot of the game, his only bucket, a one-handed floater from the baseline, shot it with confidence, and man, what a time to step up and hit a bucket. And then a couple plays later, even bigger, Gary Harris. It's like they were like trying to one-up each other with who can have the biggest shot of the game. And then Gary Harris, of course, I think gets the biggest one of all. And shot clock winding down, he just with confidence gives a nice little, comes off the pick and roll, gets the switch, although he doesn't, it's not like he had enough time. I think it's towards the end of the shot clock he had to go, so he didn't have time to like pull the ball out. But he just attacks, I believe it was Montrezl Harrell's feet, gets just enough separation to hit a tough step back fall away, and that sealed the game, man. That was, I think that put him up five with less than a minute or something like that. Just a huge shot. And again, Gary Harris, a lot of buckets today off of the dribble. And if he just has this in his game, man, he elevates himself and the team just to a whole other level. This was a mature win from the Nuggets. It felt like, more so than any time I can remember in the Michael Malone era, it felt like everybody on the team had a job. Everybody had a defined role. And I think that's really, really cool and really, really encouraging. I mean, you know, we talk about last year the bench and Barton has to do this, then that, and he's changing, and oh man, we got to hide this guy. Moutier's out there, we got to hide him. I didn't feel like there was anybody that Denver had to hide. Sure, there's certain guys you have to hide. You have to hide, you know, Jokic to a certain extent defensively, certainly Wancho. So there were guys that, you know, have weaknesses that you had to cover for, but all of those guys had a responsibility and they had something that they brought to the table. And then when you talk about five-man units, you know, the starters clearly, you know, have a lot of things they can accomplish, and even though the offense was a bit clunky, they worked. I thought they looked like a cohesive unit. And then that second unit, not the whole game, but there were stretches where they looked like a cohesive unit. And to me, this is the most the Nuggets have looked like a team that knew what their role and their responsibility were. Those roles and responsibilities will change, but I think that it was just cool to see guys like Wancho, Malik, Mason, who I thought was phenomenal tonight in limited minutes. They just all seem like they have a job to do, and they know what that job is. And through one game, that's a really encouraging thing. Before we get to the final section here and talk about Michael Malone's contract, we do have a new sponsor here, and it's Blue Chew. Guys, you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get the extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and just no awkwardness. They're all made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, they've got an incredible special, incredible deal for our listeners here at the Locked On Network. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment. Are you ready for this? Get your first shipment free when you use a special promo code. Just pay $5. That promo code, Locked On. There you go. Promo code is Locked On. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Actually, promo code it says here is CODE, C-O-T-E. I got to try Locked On. If that doesn't work, try C-O-D-E, CODE. to try it for free. Blue Chew, it's better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the show. All right, let's talk about the Michael Malone extension. It was announced right before the game that Michael Malone would be extended for 2 more years. Well, it was announced that he would be extended and that the team would not reveal what it was. But, of course, Woj hacked into the mainframe and was discovered what the terms were or something like that. And it's going to be 2 more years. So I don't think we'll find out the number. Coaches' salaries, for whatever reason, are private. I don't think they should be. I think the NBA should require that organizations publish their coaches' salary. Why is that secret? Why can't people know that one? When people want to know how much a coach is getting paid. I think this is ridiculous. But we won't know the number, but the most important thing is 2 years. Now, I think this is a very, very, very good deal. There's only one reason. So they weren't going to fire Michael Malone. He won 33 games his first year, 40 the next year, then 46. So first of all, I think he's earned an extension. He does not deserve to be fired, as I think some people believe. He's not a perfect coach. There's a lot of things he does that I find very frustrating, and there's a lot of things I disagree with. If I was the head coach of the Denver Nuggets, they would probably be terrible. So what that probably tells you nothing, that I find some things he does frustrating. But I don't think he's a perfect coach. There's other coaches out there that I think maybe would get more out of the offense or this or that or whatever. But you know what? He's a damn good one. And more important than what I think about him, that locker room loves him, and they work hard for him. They would run through a wall for him. And everybody covering the team says the same thing, because all of the players say the same thing, and because you can see it. You can see how cohesive this team is. There's no fighting. You haven't seen anything or heard anything about, oh, the locker room's dysfunctional or this guy's upset. You know, there were players like that who have come through the locker room. Yusuf Nurkic, Kenneth Freed to a certain extent. There have been guys who, you know, have been frustrated or whatever, and a lot of times that frustration will boil over to being a full-blown distraction. It has not happened. Even with Nurkic, it wasn't really, I think Malone did a good job of sort of mitigating that. So there's a lot of very, very, very big positives that I think Michael Malone brings to the table. So just on face value, him getting an extension, I think, is fair. He deserves to have, I think, more time to run this back and to see if he can continue to grow them. If you look at it like this, there's almost three layers There's three stages, I guess, of every basketball team falls into one of the three stages. One is the full-on tank / rebuild, which is, I think, what the Nuggets ended last year, where you're not trying to win. Everything that encompasses not trying to win to just trying to get in the playoffs. The second stage is the playoff stage. This is where you make it into the playoffs and you're happy to be there, and then you really learn about your team. This is where you really learn what direction you're going to go. Who's the guy that's the cornerstone? Is it the guy that you thought during the regular season? Is it the guy you thought during stage one? What type of players, what type of weaknesses do you have, and what is it that you need to do to make those things better? And then stage three would be the contention stage. You've been in the playoffs. You've refined your roster. Now you need to just get over the hump. What little adjustments do you need to make to that you're not just a playoff team, but that you're an actual contender? Well, Denver, Michael Malone, I think, no matter what you say about him, I think he was absolutely an A-plus coach for stage one. They are in a great shape. The players have developed. There's an enthusiasm for everybody to show up to work. So he gets the pat on the back. And that's what you reward. That's what the 2-year extension is for. Stage two, hopefully Denver makes it into the playoffs this year. We get a look at what they look like in the playoffs and what some of those weaknesses are, and we get to learn what kind of coach Michael Malone is and how well does he adjust on the fly game to game, how well does he prepare and game plan and all those different things. And, that's what we're going to find out. And what I like about the contract and what I think is the most important part of all this that even the harshest Malone critics, I think, need to acknowledge is unless you were going to fire him this summer, which I think would be crazy, if you fired Michael Malone after he improved the Nuggets record by 6.5 wins every single season, that are all both of the off seasons that he was here, then I think, you know, nobody would want to come coach in Denver. They'd think, well, what do you have to do? Improve by 7 games or more every single year? Nobody's in the league is doing that. It's rare for a team to improve by that many without making like a big free agency splash. So nobody would want to coach in Denver if you fired him, first of all. Second of all, Denver was in an interesting spot because as he entered the final year of his deal, if he had to play out this contract and then Denver hands him an extension, only two scenarios happened, and in my opinion, they are both worse than the one that happened. One is that they don't make the playoffs and then you fire him. That sucks. You don't want to root for that. The second is that he does make the playoffs, or the Nuggets do make the playoffs, things go well, and now you need an even bigger and longer extension to keep him. So I think that was I don't think that would have been good as well, because then you're kind of, you would almost sign him to carry the team from both stage 2 and stage 3, which you don't want to commit to a coach to do to have to go through both of those stages. You don't want to be paying a guy for that. What I think happened, and the reason that this went down to the final day, is that probably Malone's agent and the front office, you know, Malone wants more. He wants to lock up as many years as he can. Of course, this is intuitive. I don't know it for a fact. I'm just saying everybody would want to get the most amount of years. The front office and ownership, I'm sure, wants the fewest amount of years and the lowest salary. So you negotiate this all off season, but there's a ticking time bomb the ticking clock that is the NBA season, and that was it acted as sort of leverage for both sides. Both sides wanted to get this done so that it wasn't a distraction. So to me, it's not really a surprise that it lingered all the way until the day of the first game of the season. So I saw a lot of people saying, what's with this timing? That timing is crazy. I think it's just actually natural. That's the way that the leverage works. But now, with 2 years extension, you know, so it means Malone has 3 years left this year plus two more after this year. But if he were to get fired, it would almost certainly be after this year and next year. So after two seasons, he would be fired and paid his final year of his contract. That's just how it works in the NBA. Coaches don't like to be lame ducks and all of that. You've already heard already from this last go around. So it gives Malone effectively, in my opinion, two more years. And that's perfect. Because that's stage two. You know, the Nuggets should make the playoffs. Look, you never know what happens. The Nuggets don't look at it this way. They don't say, oh, two more years of, you know, just getting in and one and done or whatever. But that's sort of the window of an acceptable time frame to say, you know what, if they get in the playoffs this year and lose in the first round, you won't be too upset. They make the playoffs next year, lose in the first or second round, like whatever. It's part of the process. After that, though, it gets stale. And then it's like, okay, now Yoke will be 26, you know, Murray 23, Gary Harris 27, whatever. Now you want to start getting further and further. So what Denver basically did is they said, Malone, you pass stage one. Let's see what you got for stage two. And I just think that's the perfect thing. We will know a lot more about whether or not Michael Malone is the guy for this Nuggets roster in 2 years than we do right now. But I think there's no question that he is the guy for the roster right now this season and to take them on the journey for this next step. So I'm all for it. I think it was well done. It's like kudos to all sides. I think this is one of those rare win-wins for where it's good for Malone, it's good for the team, and they're in great position going forward. Thanks so much, guys. It's great to be back. It's great to be back here talking about actual Denver Nuggets stuff. I'll probably go to the mailbag tomorrow. So if you have a question, hit up the Locked On Nuggets hotline, 303-578-9393. That's 303-578-9393. Leave me a voicemail because I'll probably get to a lot of those tomorrow. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.